This Dvar Torah is given for the Refuah Shleima of Ya'al Shira Bas Miriam Sarah. May Hashem give her a speedy recovery, together with all of Cholei Yisrael. So now we enter into Yom Kippur. And I think out of all the questions that I've heard for Yom Kippur, there's two of them that completely blow me away. When I heard these two questions, it was so touched by them that I needed to find an answer before I actually went to Yom Kippur. The first question is the famous statement by Chazal. The rabbis give us a famous statement that blows you away when you read it. You gotta read it twice. The rabbis say, there are no happier days than Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av. Tu B'Av is in August, so forget about Tu B'Av for a second. But the rabbis are telling us there are no happier days other than Yom Kippur. Are they kidding us? Come on. I mean, the rabbis must have known that Kippur is basically torture. I mean, you can say that there are no more meaningful days, there are no more introspective days, there are no more serious days, but why in the world would the rabbis come across and say there's no more happier days? What's so happy about Yom Kippur? Second question that really struck me was the question of Kol Nidre. Being involved in NCSY, if there's one thing that I know and learned, is the power of a moment. When you're in a Shabbaton, when you're in a convention, and it's Havdalah, or Shalosh Shudos, or any other moment where everyone's sitting around, and it's quiet, and the music is playing, and it's a moment, you make or break the entire time, potentially, by what you say during that moment. Can you imagine being at a convention with hundreds of people, and music in the background, and it's quiet? And the speaker gets up there and the hush comes over the crowd and the speaker says, I just wanted to say that whoever didn't pay their bill for the Shabbaton yet, the application, please finish filling out your application and get it to us right after Shabbos. And he sits down. The crowd will be like, what are you talking about? Like, this is the... Do you have any concept? Like, don't say this now. This is the moment. Give me something inspiring. This is the time where you have me sitting here. I'm all into it. Say something that I could be moved by. Kol Nidre. If there was ever one moment of the entire Jewish calendar in which every single Jew with any connection whatsoever to Torah or Judaism, Orthodox, Reform, Conservative, Reconstruction, anyone that has any connection, they are in shul for Kol Nidre. This is the moment, the Havdalah, if you will, of God and the rabbis. This is the time where they can say anything they want, and for about 5 minutes, everybody in the Jewish people is listening. So, Chazan gets up, and the hush falls over the crowd like we do every year. We're all dressed up in our suits and in our kittels, and we're there, and we're fully satiated, and we're nervous and excited, and the Chazan walks up to the bima, and he opens up with Kol Nidre. And you quickly look to the English because you don't want to lose the moment, so you need inspiration. And it's every vow. Vesa and vow. Ushvu vow. Uneduye. Another vow. Vekuname. Another vow. And you're looking going, every vow and vow and vow and vow and more. And you get nothing from it. There's no inspiration from it. And you're totally like left hanging. What a waste. Can you imagine what they could have said? There are 1,000 amazing, inspiring statements that are said throughout Torah that God could have said, listen, stop running around after what you're doing. Give me a minute. Learn about me. Shema Yisrael. There's 1,000 things you could say. Why is saying Kol Nidre for? These are the two questions that I've been thinking about over and over again, and I finally got an answer, and I want to share it with you. There's a famous story. Well, it's not famous, but there's a story of a boy that lived with his family in a faraway village, and he got into a fight with his parents, and he ended up leaving home, running away, hitching a ride, to catching a train, to living in the city. And after a year or two, he really felt homesick. And he said, you know what, I'm going to go back home. I miss my parents. It was stupid for me to run away. That's really where I want to be. And he calls up the railroad, and he says, when do you go back to this town? They said, the truth is, it's a faraway town. No one really goes there. We go really like once every 6 months. He goes, well, how much is a ticket? He said, well, you're calling you know, a month in advance. The way we do the tickets here is it's one set price, and we fill up rolling admissions. So you call up, if there's room, you sit in the first class. I go, it's fine. He goes, where am I now? He goes, first class seat. He goes, you know, it's a month in advance. I don't really want to commit. I don't know if I'm going to go or not. I'll call you back later. 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, he calls up. It's a week before the train's set to leave. And he said, how much for a ticket? He goes, it's same price, but now second class ticket. He goes, nah, I don't want to commit. Calls back again. It's now the day before the train is leaving. He goes, how about now? They go, the truth is the whole train is packed and now standing room only, but you still have a spot that you can stand up. He goes, the truth is, I'm not sure if I want to commit. I'll wake up in the morning. If I'm in the mood, I'll come buy a ticket at the station. Fine. Wakes up in the morning. Train's leaving at noon. He wakes up at 9. He is totally wants to go. He has that feeling, that movement, that emotion. He goes, you know what? I'm going to go. So he packs up his bags. He runs out the house. He misses the bus. Then the train comes late. And then he ends up, he goes down the wrong block. Finally, he turns the corner, and it's 5 to 12. And he sees the train station. He goes, I'm going to miss the train. So he starts to run and run and run to the train. He gets to the train station. He goes to the counter. And she looks at him and goes, what am I going to tell you? There's no tickets left. He goes, no tickets left. She goes, the train's leaving right now. And he hears, eh, eh. He looks upstairs at the platform. He jumps over the turnstile, grabs his bags, runs up the stairs, comes to the platform, and as he walks into the platform, the doors close. And the train starts to move. He doesn't know what to do. He wants to go now. Now he's already invested. So he instinctively tries to run after the train. So now he's running on the platform. The train is moving on the platform. And just in about 10 seconds, the train's going to totally leave the platform. And he's totally gone. He's running with all his might. And as the train is about to pull away from the platform, the back door opens up. And the conductor sees the guy, feels so bad, sticks out his hand and says, buddy, buddy, jump, I'll catch you. And he's running, he's holding his bags, he's holding his bags, and he goes, buddy, jump, I'll catch you. Drop your bags and jump. Drop your bags and jump. We all spend our whole years looking for different stuff. We've got good friends, we try to have good fun, we run around into different things. At the end of the day, we all want one thing. We all want to be happy. That's all we want. We think happiness comes in a billion different ways. Our rabbis teach us that everyone has to wake up in the morning and say, the world was created for me. Which means I am in this world for a reason. I have a task. My task involves God's plan. When we do that task, when we can introspect into our lives and see what are our talents, what is our weaknesses, what do I deep down really want? That is the core of happiness. Of course we can be happy with our friends and family and with fun things, and we should be. But the core, that meaningful, deep-rooted happiness that each one of us have moments of throughout our lives, is when we feel we are doing our task in life. We are living meaningfully. But we spend all year putting restrictions on ourselves, creating our own baggage. I'm not good at this, and I'm not good at that, and I was born to this family, and that family, I went to this school, not that school. If I was smarter or a little less smart, if I was better looking or worse looking, if I grew up in this neighborhood and that neighborhood, we're constantly telling ourselves, I'm not going to be great, I'm not great, I'm not, building restriction upon ourselves. Baggage that we're creating for ourselves that stops us from finding out who we really are and being as great as we really can be. Well, in Judaism, the concept of putting a restriction on yourself is called a vow. When you put a vow, you're taking a restriction on yourself. So here we are. God says to us, guys, it's Elul. Come home. You just come back to me. I want you to be good. I want you to have the best life. I want you to be happy. We say, God, it's a lot of commitment. I don't know. And then if Rosh Hashanah comes in, and we're like, should we do it? Should we not do it? What? Second class seat on the train? I don't know. Nah, too much of a commitment. And then Shabbos Shuvah comes in. Now we're getting closer and closer to Yom Kippur. And we're not really sure if we want to commit. And now Yom Kippur comes. And every one of us, when we come to Shul on Yom Kippur, there's that feeling you get in that room of, I want in. I'm here now. I'm dressed. I'm eating. And there's something big happening today. And I want to be a part of it. And you stand at Shul on Yom Kippur, and the train is pulling away. It's done. Now it's Yom Kippur. And the Chazan gets up in front of everybody, and everybody is listening, and he says, drop your bags and jump. He says, Kol Nidre, Vesare, Vekuname, Ushui, every bit of baggage and restrictions and more baggage and more baggage that you've placed on yourself until now is holding you back. The train is pulling away. Just drop your bags. Don't walk into Yom Kippur with your bags on. And if you go through that exercise and you say, you know what? I'm different. And you drop your bags and you jump into Yom Kippur with Maariv and you work a good Yom Kippur in, you're on the train ride home. And you know the feeling you get when like you gotta go somewhere and you get on that train and you catch your train and the train's going to the right spot and the door's closed but you're on it? That like deep rooted like happiness of like, oh, I'm comfortable, I know I'm going to the right place. That's that deep rooted feeling you get at the end of a good Yom Kippur. At the end of a Yom Kippur where you introspect, where you think about what you want to do in life, who you want to be in life, why you haven't been able to be as great as you could be. That's Yom Kippur. And God says, whatever it is, come back to me. I'll wipe away every sin. Every mistake you made until now. Every sin. Anything that you need me to do right now to give you a clean slate, it's yours. Any question you ask me, any request you want, it's yours. The gates of heaven are open. One day, you wipe it all away. And when Yom Kippur is done, and you've jumped, and you've been face to face with yourself, and you get this, gets a sense of who you can be, what sets in is happiness. True, deep happiness. And that may be why our rabbis teach us that there are no happier days than Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av, because Yom Kippur may not be the most fun, but when you walk away with a good Yom Kippur, you're never happier. May we all have a wonderful Yom Kippur. May we all be able to get to Yom Kippur, to drop out all our baggage, jump into a life of true happiness and meaning and good things for all.